I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Once again, I'm joined by Michael Klassen, the editor of citycaucus.com, is a regular columnist at the 24 Hours paper, a wine enthusiast and a neighbor. We'll look at the political situation. There's much to talk about locally here in Vancouver and provincially with the Liberals and NDP. Mike's own website is at michaelklassen.com. Incidentally, City Caucus celebrated its second birthday last week. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Michael Klassen. Good morning, Mr. Klassen.
Good morning, Joe.
Thanks for joining us. Happy birthday to you and Daniel and all your contributors.
Yes, thank you.
The BC Liberal leadership race. That's something you're following, obviously.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's good news. I mean, it's a good news story, and it's certainly for a political junkie like me. It's like having breakfast in the morning.
Yeah, are you still a member of the BC Liberal Party?
I am, actually, yes.
Yeah. In terms of what happened to Gordon Campbell, resigning as he did, as a member of the party, as a supporter of Campbell and this government, should that have happened the way it did?
Boy, you know, at any given time between today and since the time that the premier made the decision, I would say that you'd almost want to come up with a different answer. I mean, if you just base it just on what we're hearing today, with a 5-point spread over the NDP, you would have to. I mean, let me step back a bit. Perhaps it's naive, but I always think things happen for a reason. And it belies my sort of general optimistic view of the world. And when the premier had to go for whatever his reasons, whether they be his own pressure from within, it just provided an opportunity for change. And what we're seeing now is a younger generation. I think, by and large, the two kind of leading candidates, Christy Clark and Kevin Falcon, are contemporaries, and they're in their 40s. They're really seen as kind of a new generation of leadership, potentially for the province, and I think that's a good thing.
We're seeing that too in our news anchors, I guess. CTV announcing recently that they're changing their anchors. What do you think this means for British Columbia, that we're seeing sort of this generational leadership? I don't think the next leader of the NDP, whoever that'll be, that will be, you know, sort of the same age that Carol James is, probably be the same age that Kevin Falcon or Christy Clark are, right?
It's a good possibility. I think just like with a TV anchor position or a leader of a political party, you want to have some staying power there. You know, they're essentially signing up for the job for, you know, at least 5 years. So you want somebody who's got a little bit of gas in their tank. With the greatest respect to some of the names that were thrown around about prospective leadership candidates earlier, I mean, they're, you know, people who are in their 60s and older, and you kind of go, this is a long-term commitment. This is not something you're going to do for a couple of summers. And this is why I think we're looking at kind of a changing of guard and going a little bit younger. It just kind of makes sense.
And the report in the last day or so was that the NDP's numbers, I guess, no, pardon me, the Liberals' numbers have gone up, right?
Yeah, I think the Liberals have gone up. The NDP have lost some, certainly, support with women. I think the Greens went up a little bit. BC Conservatives went down. So, yeah, it's all over the place.
And is that because of, say, the just looking at the NDP now, is that because the NDP have had their own caucus slash leadership problems?
Oh, I think definitely.
Yeah.
If you think of, I think all parties have their kind of hardcore people who will always support them. The same is true with BC Liberals and the NDP. So that sort of swing vote might be as high as, 7 to 10% of people who are sort of testing the waters and will vote you for you on election day, but may have to take some time to make up their mind. And I think what we saw is you saw that swing voter, that undecided voter, kind of pack up and leave the NDP, seeing that they, couldn't get their house in order, just bickering publicly and attacking their own leader, it just looked terrible.
Now, back to the Liberals, the candidates that are there now, Falcon, Clark, Stillwell, and Abbott.
And DeYoung.
Yeah. That's pretty much it now, right? We're not expecting anyone else to join the fray?
I think it'd be pretty surprising. I mean, for a while you heard about a couple of names, but some of them just not happened.
Yeah, and someone's already, I think Von Palmer compared this to 1986 in Whistler for the mm-hmm. Social Credit Party. Is that something that you're seeing from within?
I'm not sure if I'd say that I'm seeing that from within. I mean, my conversations are still pretty limited. I'm watching the field in this almost the same way that most people in the public are. You know, mind you, I have a few people I talk to now and again, but for the most part, I haven't been phoning people to find out what's going on with different campaigns, for example. But I thought the analogy, and I don't know if it was Vaughn that came up with it first. I know Gary Mason wrote a piece about it. It crossed my mind, and my memory of older BC politics is not as good as those two guys. But I had the exact same thought. Bud Smith, who was Attorney General in the Socred cabinet, was really seen as the heir apparent, you know, kind of a steady hand on the tiller, you know, a good cabinet minister, good credentials, you know, a little bit conservative. He was a natural to replace Bill Bennett, who was stepping down. And then Bill Vanderzand came along, brought his sort of populist fervor, and won the largest margin of victory in the history of the province. So, you know, you've got a little bit of that populism in Christie, and you've got a bit more of the kind of the doer, the conservative sort of steady hand on the tiller in Kevin Falcon. So I think it's a great analogy.
And you haven't found anyone to support yet, is that right?
No, actually, I thought I'd first of all do myself and some of my readers a bit of a favor and hold back and wait for this stuff to play out. I mean, especially in my 24 hours hat, I thought it would be more interesting to let things to play out a little bit. You know, I think that there's strengths for all the candidates, but you know, obviously we're going to have to pick one of the five. Originally I was going to say that it looks like Christie and Kevin, but you know, George Abbott is definitely working very hard, and my understanding is that, you know, DeYoung, we're yet to see kind of really what he's able. I think, you know, Moira has kind of, you know, sort of tripped out of the gate, hasn't really been able to get a real campaign going, so it will be interesting to see where she ends up.
And I think it was Gary Mason who came up with that, the comparison mm-hmm. to 1986. Now that I think about it, the NDP, there's no one that's declared yet, right?
No.
No. When is your convention? When is the BC Liberal convention?
It's really complicated, but here's the calendar, because I just had it kind of explained to me a few days ago. February 12th is an extraordinary convention that will be taking place in the city of Vancouver. It involves delegates, and delegates are currently being selected by the party. And so what this will be is a decision to change the Constitution to go from one member, one vote to a weighted ballot, which means each riding, whether it be Vancouver, Mount Pleasant, it has really no chance of electing a candidate, to Vancouver, Colchena, which is always going to probably be BC Liberal as long as they're around. And each one of them will have 100 points, and those will be divided up depending on how many members decide to vote for which candidate. So, and then on the 26th of February, there's an actual leadership vote that takes place online and in person in Vancouver. So any BC Liberal member from around the province will be voting on that day.
And then I guess the NDP is thought to have their own leadership race soon after, I guess, right?
They could have it before. I mean, depending on how quickly they want to act, but these things do take several weeks to pull together with all your organizations. So it would be interesting to see if it does. I suspect that they'll wait and wait to see who the BC Liberals put forward, because I think that'll really influence the outcome of who we see takes the leadership for the NDP.
Looking back at what's happened in the last several weeks, I mean, it has been extraordinary, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it seems to have it almost seems to have helped us to forget the rest of the year. There's just been so much activity been happening since the premier announced in November 3rd or something. So it's sent shockwaves through the political establishment, and obviously it's woken up people to provincial politics again in a way that I think was really tailing off. You know, when you have somebody who's been a leader and running the province as long as Gordon Campbell has, people just sort of lose interest, and I think that interest is being rekindled a bit.
The HST, do you think that'll change at all under any of these five that are running for leadership of the Liberal Party?
The HST is such a bizarre thing. You know, I tend to be kind of dispassionate about these things. Because I was working closely with Colin Hanson during that time, you know, I have a high confidence in what the government has said since then. They got kind of stuck in a corner, had to figure out a way to kind of make sure that they could still maintain core services, yet compete with the Ontario government and other value-added tax jurisdictions. And so they made a decision. They made a decision that I think that I'm sure that they're kicking themselves over and over again. Not so much that they made the decision to make British Columbia have the HST, is the way they brought it in. And they probably wish they had maybe negotiated a little harder with the federal government, who was really pushing them, the province, to make this decision right away. And had they been able to kind of slow down a little bit, we wouldn't be seeing the mess that followed. And I think it's disappointing. We're starting to hear a little bit more, you know, anecdotal information about the benefits of the tax, the way it's structured right now with under the HST for business, which is leading to employment and making sure that our economy is sound. And you know, when you compare what's happening in BC to so many other jurisdictions right now that are really struggling, especially in Europe, you just have to be really thankful that we're doing as well as we are.
Now let's move to the less exciting at the moment municipal scene. I guess it's not exciting. I think there's stuff going on in Vancouver, right?
Yes.
Who's Vivian Krause?
Vivian is somebody I met late last spring, probably May or June. She was introduced to me to somebody who I'd just been having a dialogue with over email. And I didn't know who she was. I met Vivian really over the phone. I think we didn't really meet in person until quite a long time, late in the summer. And I was really struck by her, how forthcoming she was, her personal sacrifice to really dig into this story like nobody else has. What Vivian, I think, has shown with absolute certainty is that there is a concerted effort at some level, and I think it's happening from foreign donors to interfere with the exporting of, in particular, Alberta oil off the Pacific coast. And how they're doing that is quite fascinating. It's an absolute labyrinth. And for any of your listeners, I really want you to kind of sort of step back a little bit and try, if you can, to not really take the message that oil is bad or oil is going to be lapping up on our beaches and things like that. Sure, there is a risk, of course, whenever you're exporting crude oil by water, that you're going to have a problem. I mean, we've seen it happen on a number of instances. But, of course, it doesn't But it continues to be transported off the coast around the world. The entire U.S. coastline, it's transported. On our East Coast, it's transported. So we have to kind of ask ourselves, why are we so focused on trying to block this passage between the north tip of Vancouver Island and the Alaskan Panhandle? And how they're doing that is that they're giving these huge grants, largely to First Nations, but they're also granting. They've been doing huge political and, as Vivian calls it, demarketing campaigns that are really shaming a lot of industry about the idea of having the pipeline, the Enbridge pipeline. Even if you were kind of dispassionate about this at all, I think that if you looked at where the numbers, the amount of money that's being spent, how it's being targeted in a very specific region. For example, as Vivian said in her Financial Post editorial that was in Thursday's paper, yesterday's paper, the grants that they give are only allowed to go to First Nations and groups that are servicing between the north tip of Vancouver Island and the south tip of the Alaska Panhandle. And, for example, if you're on the west coast of Vancouver Island, they won't give you any grants. So, if this was really about conservation and really about protecting our coastline, you think they would be equitably donating money and supporting groups along the entire coastline. But they're only targeting the places where tankers would move. And so that's a very deliberate strategy. So we have to kind of step back and go, okay, wait a sec. We've got a bunch of American corporations who are paying into large, multi-billion-dollar charitable foundations who are giving vast sums of money to groups in Canada to agitate politically and on many levels, environmental groups, and ENGOs, environmental non-governmental organizations. They're having MPs bring motions to Parliament and debating them and having them passed, like Nathan Cullen. So it's quite unbelievable. And I just think that if people were even a little bit concerned about the sovereignty of our national energy policy, they'd be taking a close look at this and be asking the kinds of questions that Vivian is.
And then the connection to Cambion 12th and the people there now is what?
Yeah, there absolutely is. The Tides Canada Foundation have been the conduit for some but not all of the money that has been coming in through these foundations. The thing I learned about charities this summer is that a charity can give money to a charity with no consequences. Charities cannot give money to private businesses unless, of course, they're working for them as consultants. And that's the thing that was a little bit concerning. More than a little bit concerning. I mean, we've talked about it a number of times. A lot of the consultants that have been hired by these charities are also giving very substantive donations to Vision Vancouver. And so, the question is, okay, you're getting a lot of money from a charity, and then you're also giving a lot of money to Vision Vancouver. Are there reasons to be concerned about that? So it's just a question that Vivian has put out there, and one that so far there hasn't been any proper response to.
The we mentioned off the top, City Caucus celebrated its second birthday. We're going into an election year. Does the mandate of the website, does that change at all? How do you see the website in this election year?
I wish we could say that we were long range planners, but we're not really long range planners. I mean, most of the decision making happens between on phone calls between Daniel and myself. When we decided to do citycaucus.com in November 2008 and launched it at the beginning of December of 2008, it really was not intended to be around in 2 years. It just took off, and it's when you're doing something that's not really earning you any income. I mean, we've got a little bit of advertising now, especially with the provincial leadership campaigns. We've got some advertising come in. We had some a decent amount of advertising come in when we were drawing all that traffic during the Olympics. But for the most part, it's more of a marketing tool, really, to develop our own brand, my own brand, which it's an investment. It's like any kind of entrepreneurial startup. You know, you put a lot of time into it, and hopefully you get a return at the after all you all your work. So, looking into 2011, City Caucus, I think, will probably become more important over time, because, you know, the first 2 years of a 3-year mandate, most people aren't really paying attention. There's a small core. I mean, we've been lucky to attract a good amount of attention, but I think that will increase as more and more people become focused on the so-called silly season, the election season. And so, I think the municipal politics is going to really take a back seat until the leadership is over at the end of February for the BC Liberals, and then of course the MPA are having their candidate nominations in late in the spring. I think second half of May. I suspect Vision will probably do theirs a few weeks afterwards, as they did last time. It's going to be very interesting to see who's going to be running for Vision. I expect that they'll have, you know, you won't see a lot of changes. I may be surprised, but I expect most of these people feel like that they want to, you know, now that they've had a taste of government, they want to keep going for a while.
Mm-hmm. We both live on Fraser, near Fraser and King Edward. There's a new coffee shop. Have you tried that yet at Fraser and 24th?
The Outpost Cafe. Yeah. I have. I only walked in there just to take a look around, and as I tweeted out, I said it was the first hipster coffee shop on Fraser Street. Joe, you've lived around here like I have for a while, and you've seen the changes. It's gradual, but I take heart in what we're seeing. Slowly, we're starting to see Fraser turn into a little bit more of a dynamic street. The most interesting thing to me is just being able to walk to grocery stores. Like, we're going to have a new grocery store over on 29th. And,
mm-hmm.
It's really important that cities evolve like that, and it's really important that Fraser Street evolves as being one of the busier streets in the city.
Mike, thanks for this.
You're welcome. Thanks, Joe.
And happy birthday again to City Caucus. Best of the season. Happy Christmas.
Thank you. Thanks, Joe.
The website's for more, citycaucus.com, michaelclassen.com, Mike Klassen on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.